and welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we are doing on Thursday morning here in Manila, back in the good old USA. It's still Wednesday night, which means still somebody's birthday, but not yours, Tim Bontemps, who's joining us from an island off the coast of the United States of America in an undisclosed location.
All of that is accurate. Not my birthday.
But not Manhattan.
I'm not on the continent. I'm not on Manhattan Island today. I'm on a different island. Next week, I'll be in Italy, but I'm not there yet.
Oh, that would be fantastic. I can text you in the morning when there's, or in the middle of the day when there's nobody awake.
That's true.
joining us from Dallas, Texas, the birthday boy, celebrated his birthday with a case of back spasms. Not that you're getting old, man, McMahon.
Howdy, partners. It is my Andre Kirilenko birthday, and I felt it when I made the athletic move of reaching for some Tupperware. A little tweak, some heat.
Sometimes the Tupperware is real high up on the shelf, and you just need that one special Tupper.
Ours is low, so that's what got me.
It's funny you say that about Andre Kirilenko, because I remember when the Nets signed him that summer when they had KG and Pierce, and they I remember being at Summer League in Orlando when they signed him, and Matt Riccardi, who now is the assistant, I think he's assistant GM now with Dallas, but he's with the Mavs, came by the media room, was all fired up. I went out in the hallway and talked to him. And then obviously there was this whole investigation into whether had some illegal agreement with him. And then he ended up playing a handful of games, was horrible, and retired by Christmas. It's just a hilarious sequence.
So,
when he retired, did the NBA pause? Did they just call off the investigation? Because I think that's what the league does.
I wouldn't even try to do that. That was pretty good.
Kirilenko had a $10 million give or take option, player option with the Minnesota Timberwolves. He declined it, which everybody was pretty surprised about. But okay, maybe there's going to be some long term deal. And instead, he signed a $3 million. Was it $3 million?
I think he signed for the room exception or some sort of room mid-level, maybe. It was around $3 or $4 million at the time, whatever exception it was at the time.
With the Brooklyn Nets, who had just been purchased by Mikhail Prokhorov.
Where's Prokhorov?
I'm sure.
It was a couple of years earlier, but yes.
I'm sure everything was on the up and up, and I'm sure the league's investigation was completely thorough. Okay, so I did meet one Russian here, Vladimir. Shout out to Vladimir. He's I'm not going to say where he's at
right now,
he's in Manila. But
McMahon, the list just keeps growing of the shout outs from on the ground in Manila.
Listen, he's got lot of people, a lot of countries, a lot of
oh my God. You too. Time after time, all day long. Okay, it rains all day here. It just rains all day. It's monsoon season. I tried to play golf the other day. I made it 12 holes. No chance of finishing.
What a tough life. Can't get through an 18-hole round of golf.
Through the middle of the night, we're getting alerts on our phones about flooding in Manila. It's full-on monsoon season. I finally get inside these buildings and nonstop people coming up to me talking about Bontemps and McMahon. Bontemps and McMahon, where are your two friends? Where are your podcast guys? On and on and on, over and over and over, all day long.
Can we bring back the theme song?
there are probably bands here who know this theme song who would play it. I'm making a joke. The Filipino fans are great, and they are. You know what it's like? You know how, like if you're in Dallas during Cowboys season and everybody's probably talking about the Cowboys, like on Wednesday, they're talking about what happened on Sunday and what's coming up and all that stuff. That's what it's like in Manila, except for it's about the NBA, but it's about the whole NBA.
Right.
Like they are like aware of like what's going on with the Jazz. Maybe not every single person, but like, I saw somebody the other day in a Markelle Fultz jersey. Okay. They are,
an Orlando Markelle Fultz?
It was
it Philly or Orlando?
It was, you know, it was some specialty jersey. It was like black and red and white. I don't know if it was some specialty Orlando. I think it was an Orlando jersey, but it was some one of the specialty jerseys. But they are very sad because the Gilas, the Filipinas, the Philippine national team went 0-3 and won no games. And so they will not be advancing. So the second round is going to start on Friday. The field has been gone from 32 down to 16. The big surprise is that France did not advance, but that was established a couple of days ago. The surprise teams to this point have been Latvia, who advanced the second round without Kristaps Porzingis. There isn't actually a lot of Celtics fans in Manila. Very pro-Laker. Not a lot of Celtics
fans. Except for the Senators, apparently.
The Senators have advised me that they are one of the few Celtics fans in Manila. But one of the Senators was wearing an authentic Derek White jersey the other day. Wow. This is the kind of thing I'm talking about. You see Derek White jerseys and Markel Fultz jerseys.
I'm not sure I've ever seen one of those in the wild in America.
That's what I'm saying. Like, welcome to the Philippines. Also, they have at least two NBA stores here. I've seen two of them. Giant, fully stocked NBA stores. How many NBA stores are there in the United States? I believe there's one.
I think there's one in New York. I think there's one in New York. Yeah. And it's gotten repetitively smaller over time.
These are bursting at the seams.
How many selfies at least have you taken?
Dozens a day. Dozens a day.
He's a man of the people, Tim. He's a man of the people.
Down the kind of the rhythm to it, the couple steps, shuffle, smile, shuffle, smile, shuffle, smile.
It's not even like that. Like when I'm walking through the arena, people on the upper deck will be leaning down to get me in the background. So I can wipe out like 7, 8, 9, 10, just turning my body slightly.
Usually this.
So anyway, no, Filipino fans are great. Their atmosphere in the arenas has been great. Here's the thing. They play at the games, John Denver's, Country Roads, Take Me Home, West Virginia. What's the name of the song? Country Roads.
Sure. Yes.
They love this song. They love John Denver.
Good song.
They play this song at the games and they put the bouncing ball on the word. So that the people, it's kind of like a Journey at NBA games.
Yeah. Or like Sweet Caroline at the Red Sox games.
Yes. Yes. They don't do it at every game, but they play Country Roads. And last night I was at a bar where there was a band playing and they played Country Roads. John Denver. They love it. They love it.
Is this?
And I do find it endearing.
Have you set a personal record for bar visits in a week? Every time we talk,
this was at a very high end establishment with, you know, wooden walls and
couldn't be
like
too
that.
High end. They're playing Country Roads.
I'll just say that Ernest Hemingway was known to frequent this bar. That's all you need to know. That's
what
the kind of
drinking?
Place I hang out. Coke Zero. they also love the Chicken Dance song. Big fans of Chicken Dance song. And the Kiss Cam, of course, is big. Didn't see the Kiss Cam in Abu Dhabi, going to be honest with you. But
I was going to say it crosses all borders, but apparently not.
No Kiss Cam in Abu Dhabi. But Kiss Cam is alive and well in Manila. Team USA finished the first round 3-0. It was a 42.5-point spread against Jordan. Going into the game on Wednesday morning in the U.S. I wasn't sure about that because Jordan, while they were completely outclassed, had kind of hung with Greece and New Zealand. The New Zealand game went to overtime. And I was like, you know, I don't know if they'll put the hammer down, but they won by 48. The bookmakers were correct. So I have to say, Steve Kerr and by extension, Eric Spoelstra and Ty Lue and Mark Few. Also, Jeff Van Gundy is back. He, our condolences to Stan Van Gundy, who lost his wife recently. Yeah. Jeff left and the whole Van Gundy family. Jeff left from Abu Dhabi and just came back. And, you know, Jeff is a definite part of the coaching staff. Also, Jamal Mosley has been here from the Orlando Magic, sort of ancillary members of the coaching staff.
He was also the coach of the select team, Jamal Mosley.
That's right. That's right. Here to see Paolo Banchero play really, really well. He's playing well. But these guys are doing such a terrific job. You know, I think that we often talk about coaching where there's problems, and I obviously they have a talented team. I'm not trying to make it sound like, you know, they're not working with premium material, but the way they have assembled this team, Steve Kerr has had so many terrific quotes in this run. The way they have assembled this team, the way they have prepared the team, the way they have motivated, continue to motivate the team. The Team USA was playing full-on focused basketball into the fourth quarter against Jordan. I'm going to tell you why in a second. And just the nuance that they've that Steve has done on a day-to-day basis. And I'll give you an example of what I'm talking about. So he changed his starting lineup against Jordan for the first time since they started training camp, basically. He took out Brandon Ingram and he put in Josh Hart. Josh Hart against Greece a couple of days ago came off the bench, had 11 rebounds and 5 assists. And this is a couple of terrific quotes that came out of that game. Steve Kerr says Josh Hart's position is winner. People ask what position he plays. He plays winner. And he repeated a quote from Eric Spoelstra, which was, some players get 50-50 balls. Josh Hart gets 30-70 balls.
Mm-hmm.
And Spoelstra obviously knows Josh Hart quite well because they play each other in the second round of the playoffs this year, Heat, Knicks. And so Hart has very much impressed the coaching staff. But you may see, Brandon Ingram is taken out of the starting lineup, and he's been struggling. He's been shooting under 40%, averaging 7 points or 6 points a game. You may say demotion, like, you know, he's not getting it done. Get him out of there. Huge disappointment for an all-star. But they were doing it to help Brandon Ingram because they recognize that Brandon Ingram is struggling in the role where he doesn't have the ball in his hands. That typically in New Orleans, especially when Zion is not playing, the ball goes to Brandon Ingram in the half court. And not only can he create his own shot, but he creates shots for others. He is I don't know if I go so far as to say he's a point forward, but he definitely is a hub in their offense. Mm-hmm. That is the way he is used to playing. That is the way he prefers to play. He didn't come in to this event being like, okay, I got to get 12 shots a game. Get it over to me. He came in, he told me, he studied the film of the way Carmelo Anthony played. He studied the film of the way Kevin Durant played. He came in trying to play, but he was just struggling. He is not used to playing it. So Steve Kerr says, okay, he comes to Brandon Ingram in the morning, says, hey, we're going to put Josh Hart in for you. But when you play with the second unit, we want you to be a playmaker. Okay. And that meant that Austin Reeves and Tyrese Halliburton, who have been the primary ball handlers in the second unit, we're going to have the ball a little bit less. And that may seem like a problem because they've been playing so well. But Steve Kerr realizes that the value of Reeves and Halliburton is as their defense and that they're going to create stops, which will enable them to run, which is when they're at their best. Plus Reeves and Halliburton have no egos. So if they need to help Brandon Ingram get going a little bit, they're willing to do that. And so guess what happens in this game? Because you're playing Jordan, it's not life or death. The second unit, they let Brandon Ingram cook a little bit. Mm-hmm. He gets 5 assists in like his first 11 minutes on the court. He ended up with 5 in 15 minutes, but he had like 4 assists in 7 minutes. And he also made some baskets. Completely looked different in the way he played. And what Steve Kerr is saying, and you know, the thing about it is Steve Kerr played in the World Cup in 1986. 1986, okay? McMahon, you were in the single digits back then, I think.
Not as of today, but that's okay.
Okay.
Actually, not as. Yeah.
Well, not ever. Anyway, Steve Kerr has been around for a long time, all right? And of all the things that Steve Kerr has won, he also won a gold medal at the 86 World Cup, which was not as common back then because we didn't play our professionals. So Steve Kerr knows that when you play FIBA, that you never know how games are going to go. And there may be, even though the U.S. is doing just fine without Brandon Ingram's contributions, he knows that there may be a point, and it may be Friday against Montenegro, which is their next game. It may be Sunday against Lithuania, which is will be their second their other second round game, that they need Brandon Ingram. And so Steve Kerr is working on massaging and getting Brandon Ingram back to where he needs to get. And so these are the things that are happening with this team, that I know that it's, you know, this game was played at 4:40 a.m. Eastern. I know the people didn't watch it. I get it. But they're working at it. There's a lot of work going on here, and there's a lot of positives coming out of this team. And I know I've filibustered Bontemps, but I don't even know if you got to watch the game.
Yeah, I mean, look, I really like the idea of Brandon Ingram coming off the bench, because I didn't think, you know, to your point, him as a third option in the starting lineup sort of defeats the purpose of having him on the court. He's not a great defensive player. He's out there to be a scorer. And if he's going to be the third option behind Anthony Edwards, who's become the first option, and Jalen Brunson, who in that group is going to be the second option sort of by default, then you're talking about Brandon Ingram as the third option. I didn't really like that. I think having Josh Hart out there, the guy who's going to be a garbage guy on the boards, is going to push the ball in transition, does not need the ball, obviously has tremendous chemistry with Jalen Brunson going back for many years now, but certainly now playing again with him with the Knicks.
As well as Mikal Bridges.
Right. And obviously you're right. You have the whole Villanova connection in the starting lineup then with Mikal Bridges out there, another guy who doesn't need the ball. And then, you know, you're talking about Haliburton and Reeves. The difference between those guys and Anthony Edwards and Jalen Brunson is Anthony Edwards and Jalen Brunson are hold the ball, have the ball in their hands guys. Tyrese Haliburton and Austin Reeves are spray the ball ahead, quick trigger, quick passes, quick decision-making guys. That's why that second unit has been such a weapon for them going back to the first day of training camp, because those guys are able to take advantage of these second units. And like you said, now you have Brandon Ingram out there in the role he probably should have been in the whole time, in the Carmelo Anthony, Jason Tatum role, where he comes in off the bench and can just fill it up against these second units where there's nobody who can guard a 6'9 wing with the scoring ability that he has. So yeah, I think Steve Kerr's done a great job with the way they have built this roster and the way they've utilized it. They are, like we've talked about a bunch, very small. It will be very interesting to see how this game against, or really, you know, both these games against Nikola Vucevic and then against Jonas Valanciunas, two obviously good NBA centers. Those are going to be challenges for them to handle. But, you know, the way they've constructed this team and the way Steve Kerr wants to play, they had a very clear theory of how they want to go about it. And it's really come into pretty great form in a way that it really never did 4 years ago in the last World Cup.
Yeah, and I think, and I will admit, I woke up, checked the score, decided I didn't need to go back and watch this game.
I mean, it was your birthday at 3:40 a.m. start Central, McMahon. So, you are given an official dispensation.
Saw some highlights, but I'm not going to sit here and tell you I really dug into a 48-point win over Jordan by Team USA. But I think this also works because of the versatility of Haliburton and Reeves. Like, these are guys who they can be primary playmakers, but they don't need to be. And not necessarily that Brunson in particular needs to be. Obviously, he played off of Luka, but, you know, Haliburton has the experience of playing in a backcourt with De'Aaron Fox as the lead guard. You know, Austin Reeves obviously plays with LeBron James. Both of these guys are used to being able to get off the ball if they need to. You know, they're both certainly capable of spacing the floors and being more of secondary type of ball handlers. And I think that makes it an easy transition if you want to put the ball in Ingram's hands more.
Yeah. So the other thing that happened in this game was that Steve Kerr experimented with playing Bobby Portis and Jaren Jackson. Bobby Portis and Jaren Jackson together. Steve Kerr prefers to play small. He's basically his starting center is Jaren Jackson, obviously, who plays four for a lot of the time with the Grizzlies. His backup center is Paolo Banchero. He does play Bobby Portis some, but Bobby Portis is not even really in the second unit. He's sort of in like the second and a half unit, and Walker Kessler is like the odd man out. He did play some, and when he has played, he's looked good. It's not because he hasn't looked good. But guess what happens when Walker Kessler comes in? He immediately starts blocking shots, getting rebounds, and getting baskets. Like his production is But, you know, he prefers to play small. But he was playing, he was experimenting. And this is what I'm talking about with them using this game. And it's one thing to say you're going to use the game, but it's one thing to actually use it. And they played hard all the way. In fact, Steve Kerr had to call a timeout in the third quarter to get his starters out of the game because the starters had the gas down. And Ant Edwards was going for it. He didn't know that Durant's scoring record is 38 in a game. He was informed afterwards. If he knew that before the game, he might have gone for 38 because he scored 22. And Kerr in the third quarter finally, you know, called off the dogs and called timeout to get Ant out of the game. And when he called timeout, Ant tossed up a 35-footer. It didn't count because after the timeout, and he made it. And he was like, man, I wish that counted. And Ant is just an absolute joy. He Rondé Hollis-Jefferson, who we talked about in the last pod, was playing for Jordan. They played when he was a rookie. Hollis-Jefferson was with the Wolves for a while, and he was mentoring Ant. So they have a good relationship. They hadn't seen each other in a while. And they were going back and forth. And Hollis-Jefferson actually had 16 in the first half, and Ant had, I think, maybe 14 or 15. And then Hollis-Jefferson sprained his ankle. Rolled his ankle really bad in the second quarter, and he kept playing, but he finished with 20. I don't know what he would have had. I don't know how long he would have played, but he might have gone for 30. He drew 15 fouls the other night against New Zealand, and you may say, well, New Zealand isn't the Americans. Well, he drew 7 fouls in the first half against the U.S. 7. He's got like an awkward game, and he was totally fooling. I think in the NBA, if you game plan for him, obviously that would be cut down, but he has something going on. But anyway, Ant was going back and forth with him. And after the game, they brought Ant to the press conference, which they probably won't do too many more times because he, you know, in FIBA, all press conferences are in English. Which it didn't used to be that way. They used to be translated, used to be interminable, but English is the language of basketball and everybody speaks it, some better than others. I don't speak all these different languages. I'm not taking a stance. Everything's done in my language. Well, some of the reporters, their English, you know, is accented to our ear. And there was a reporter from Spain and he was asking Anthony a question and Anthony couldn't understand the question. First, he couldn't understand the words. And then when the words were sort of translated for him, he still didn't understand the question. And so he goes, look, man, I keep it simple. I get a stop and I score a basket. That's what I do. I was like, that was like his answer. He's like, look, this is my answer to all inquiries. I get a stop, get a basket. And everybody laughed. And Steve Kerr goes, that's why we love him. So then at the end, he gets asked this question about Montenegro. I'm sorry, he gets asked this question about Lithuania. But they're not playing Lithuania next. They're playing Montenegro. And that was confusing. And even mm-hmm. Steve Kerr jumped in and said, actually, we're playing, you know, or we're focused on Montenegro. But the person was like, well, Lithuania is undefeated. Are you worried about it? He's like, look, man, we're going to win. We don't care. This isn't an exact quote. Yeah, he was like,
I'll read the exact quote from your story.
Okay.
Which I would encourage people to read. Let me pull it up real quick. Y'all should go read Brian's story on Rondé Hollis-Jefferson, by the way, mimicking Kobe. It was a very good story. Here's the quote. I think we're going to win, Edwards said with a smile. We're undefeated also. I think we have a great chance to win. We got a great coaching staff. We got great players, and our confidence is at all times. We're not really worried about those guys.
Yeah, so that's the thing. Like, it was unclear whether he was getting asked about Montenegro or getting asked about Lithuania. And he's like, look.
Listen, here's the bottom line. Anthony thinks they're going to win the tournament and they're going to beat everybody. And that's how we should be thinking, because they should win the tournament and they should beat everybody.
But when he said it, Steve Kerr kind of gave like a, ooh, maybe we shouldn't have said that quote. But yeah, it doesn't care.
No, he doesn't.
And
not.
So he had a great night. He had a great night. Was talking some smack at Rondé Hollis-Jefferson. It was, you know, look, in a game that was lopsided, it was very fun to watch because of Ant. But anyway, I've gone.
Well, this tournament is gone the way it was potentially going to so far for him. I mean, obviously the real games are ahead, but the first month of his time with Team USA, it's been as good of a run as it could be.
Well, the last time Team USA was in the World Cup in China in 2019, where they finished seventh, there was red flags flying everywhere after the pool play round. And they ended up kind of grinding their way through the second round, and it looked like they were going to be okay, even though Jason Tatum had gotten hurt, and they ended up losing two in a row after that. So now all the dashboard is all green. And one of the things that they were preparing for by playing Portis and Jaren Jackson together is that Montenegro has size and Lithuania has size. And the only NBA player they have seen so far has been Thanasis Antetokounmpo, who is on the edge of the NBA. Well, now we start to see some real NBA players here, particularly some real NBA big men. Ooh. Starting with Nikola Vucevic, who is averaging 21 points and 8 rebounds, I believe, so far for Montenegro, Chicago Bulls, one of McMahon's favorite acquisitions in the league.
I like the player fine. I just didn't like the trade, and I don't like the contract, but go on.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems with nothing on your roof. So who's ever up there, whether it's the roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. And then Sunday, so the way the second round works, the U.S. will play Montenegro and Lithuania, whether they win or lose on Friday. And then four teams will advance. The four teams are in their little pod here. Two of them will advance to the quarterfinals. It will be record first and point differential second. So the U.S. wins both games, they're through. Mm-hmm. If they split, it'll get a little hairy, although the U.S. is in very good position because their point differential through three games is they're 3-0 and they're plus 103.
If they beat Montenegro, on Friday, they automatically will qualify for the quarterfinals. They just can't lose that game.
Going back real quick, a suggested headline for aggregators, Windy, colon. And Antetokounmpo, quote, not a real NBA player. Just a suggested headline.
I said he was on the edge.
And don't bother with the first initial. Just saying, Antetokounmpo, quote, not a real NBA player.
I don't think I said not a real NBA player. I said on the edge. I mean, Slovenia has one NBA player. How's he? Is he good?
He's not on the edge. Hey, best player in the tournament. Mark Cuban is, he's retweeting Theo Pinson podcast where they're talking about this great debate of who's the best player in the World Cup. So Bontemps, people are out there listening to you, brother, because I ain't heard a single other person say it.
Listen, this whole thing is taken on a very silly life of its own. I'll just say that.
I'll say this: SGA has not made you look foolish.
No, the whole point from the beginning was just to say that he is on the level of that kind of player, which he is on the level of that kind of player. If Luka, certainly it's fair to say Luka's better. None of this was meant as a shot at Luka, but of course, the entire country of Slovenia is angry. So it is what it is.
Well, look, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander was a first team All-NBA player last year.
That is
correct. If you've achieved that level, you are doing very well. Luka, by the way, is leading the World Cup in scoring through pool play. He's averaging 30 points a game. He's shooting 46% from the field, just 24% from three. He is absolutely, his ability to get to the line in FIBA play, you're only allowed four fouls. And so the ability to get, did you hear that, McMahon? Happy birthday.
I was going to let it slide.
Happy birthday to Mikal Bridges celebrating his birthday with you.
Well, this Luka conversation transitions us, I think, into what's going to be the really
he wasn't done.
Oh, sorry. I thought he was done.
Yeah. Anyway, Luka is getting to the line 15 times a game. And keep in mind, the games are 40 minutes and there's only, he foul out at five fouls. So his ability to use his size and here's the other thing. When you talk to the Team USA players about the officiating, what they will say to you is that, and in some ways this is refreshing, depending on who you're talking to, is that the officials in FIBA referee the play, not the player. Because one of the biggest complaints in the NBA is that, you know, obviously the players get certain calls. And that in general, I'm not saying you can't find cases, in general. So it's not like Luka is getting, touch fouls, although I'm sure that's happening a little bit. But so, he's getting 15 free throws a game.
Has he been teed up probably, in games?
I don't think so. So I'm just saying, he's getting 15 free throws a game. So he probably still thinks he should be getting about 34.
Oh, listen, and Luka, you mentioned a couple podcasts ago, whatever pamphlet you're looking at, where there's a section about the referees and is Luka barking at a referee is the picture. Believe it or not, Luka's had his fair share of disagreements with FIBA officials over the years. One of my favorite stat from the Olympics, the last Olympics, when Luka led Slovenia to the a fourth place finish, not a medal, but first Olympic bid. I mean, the guy had 48 in his Olympic debut, was phenomenal. But my favorite stat is he had 5 tees in 6 games.
Pretty good.
I have to look. So, I don't think he's had any yet, but I don't know for 100%.
I don't know for certain, but I don't believe he has.
Okay.
Yeah. So, all he needs is like 15 free throws and he'll lay off the refs a little bit.
So 15 free throws a game. So that's hard to deal with. So he didn't have his best game in their last, I think he's like 6 of 20 or something.
Yeah, I was
going to
say his field goal percentage took a pretty significant dip because he had an off night shooting the ball in his last game.
But well, just one, like when you play. Yeah, it was against Cape Verde. He was 5 of 17 from the
Eddie Tavares
from the floor.
Yeah, the EuroLeague Defensive Player of the Year, his former Real Madrid teammate.
Yeah,
I was briefly an NBA player, might be again at some point.
He did have 7 rebounds, 9 assists, and 4 steals in that game. By the way, there's never, to my knowledge, I don't think we've had one this week. There's never been a triple double in the World Cup.
Really? That's surprising.
I think that's 40
minute games.
Luke has had triple doubles in 40 minute games before, brother. He's
it's
had
true.
So Josh Giddey from Australia, just because Josh Giddey as a 6'8" point guard has the he's a good rebounder. Josh Giddey is a candidate. Luka is a candidate to get that done. But that's a big game. So on Friday, what time is it on Friday? I think it's probably 8 a.m. And you can, if you're up at 8 a.m. on Friday, you can watch this on ESPN Plus. Not to be a company man, but like if you're looking for a good game,
it's arguably the biggest game Slovenia, of the entire second round.
Yeah, Slovenia plays Australia on Friday. Australia is 2-1.
Slovenia and Germany are
3-0.
Slovenia and Germany are 3-0. So because Germany beat Australia, and the way these tiebreakers go, who advances between Slovenia and Australia very well could come down to the winner of that game. And actually, now that I think about it, if Australia loses that game, they 100% don't advance to the knockout round. They have to win that game to advance.
There's history there. They played for the bronze in the Olympics.
That's right.
And Australia handled Slovenia pretty well. I think Luka, I don't think he had a whole lot left in the tank by that point.
Yeah, he played his heart out in the semifinal.
Right, where they lost to France when Batum had a great block on Prepelic, one of his teammates, at the buzzer. So, or right around the buzzer. So, Slovenia would love to get some payback against the Boomers.
And the way these work is it goes head-to-head tiebreakers between tied teams, and then it goes to point differential in games between tied teams. And in this second round, you only play the teams you haven't played yet. And so the fact that Germany beat Australia the Australians have to win this game to give themselves a chance. And then it could come down to a three-way tie if Slovenia then beats Germany. But if they lose all of two losses, they won't be able to catch either one of them, almost certainly.
And by the way, Paddy Mills is still the star of that Australian team.
Well,
Paddy Mills turns into Steve Nash in these events. It's crazy. He's averaging 19 points.
Yeah. He's put up some numbers, but that team is built around Josh Giddey.
Giddey's on the rise, no doubt. But Paddy Mills is still a guy who puts the ball in the basket.
For sure.
And an awfully high clip for that team.
No, he's still a very important player for them. But they've really engineered this thing around Giddey this time around. Like, the ball's in his hands all the time. It's going to be – this game on Friday is going to be Giddey versus Luka. Like, that's most of what the game is going to be. And that, you know, for a guy in Josh Giddey who's going into his third year in the NBA, obviously going to be – interesting to see what his role is with the Thunder this season. You know, obviously Shea's going to have the ball. He's got to try to play off the ball. You know, it's going to be an interesting fit. It's a big opportunity for him going toe-to-toe with, you know, one of the very best players in the world in a do-or-die game for them. It's going to be very interesting to see how that one goes.
So I will say also for Australia, one of the players who's had sort of a breakout World Cup is Xavier Cooks, who is with the Wizards. I think he was on a two-way. I don't know if he's still on a two-way.
I can tell you right
now. Last year was his first year with the team. He's a four. He has been like a bit of a revelation for the Australians. He's averaging 14 points a game.
He's on a standard contract for Bobby's info.
Oh, is he? Okay. But he is a shot blocker, and he's averaging like two blocks a game, 14 points. And so here are his numbers. Here he's averaging 14 points, 7.7 rebounds, 7 blocks a game, and stingy on blocks. From my estimate, I haven't seen this, but like Jaren Jackson is robbed of at least 1 to 2 blocks a game. I don't know how they're computing them, but
Wendy hates the refs for FIBA, the stat keepers.
Actually, I think the officiating has been okay so far. I haven't seen anything wild. The officiating has been okay. But like everything from FIBA is just a little bit not right. They're very, very focused on the operation in general is very, very focused on a set rules as opposed to practicality. Practicality goes right out the window. And that's not just here. It's always the case.
The Slovenia Australia game is huge for the Mavericks, not just because it's Luka, but there are two Mavericks players in the Australian rotation.
Right.
Josh Green, who's obviously been around for a while and perhaps could have a contract extension by the time the season starts. And Dante Exum, who signed a minimum deal after spending some time over in Europe to try to get his NBA career going again. I would assume Exum will spend a lot of time guarding Luka.
Yes, I would think he'll be the primary assignment on. He's been starting, I think.
Yes, Exum has been getting good reviews for his sort of rebound situation coming back. Mm-hmm. And I think it's actually, it's a minimum signing, right? Minimum signings don't always pay off, but the people I know who pay attention to mm-hmm. things thought that was a good, quality move by Dallas at a low risk, potentially high upside move for Exum.
Yeah, and Josh Green, he's a guy who definitely deserves another shot in the NBA. And I mean, he was a fifth overall pick. He definitely can guard. He used to not be able to shoot, but he shot it well last year in Europe. So, we'll see.
Through the first couple games, Josh Green and Matisse Thybulle have been going back and forth in the starting lineup. So I would think at least to start that one of them will be getting the initial assignment on Luka. But I'm sure whenever Dante's on the court, that's who he'll be guarding.
The thing about Josh Green is he seems to thrive playing up tempo.
Yes.
And I'm not sure that's always the way they play. He has played well. He's shooting 63% overall in the World Cup. But he had his weakest game in the game that they lost to Germany. And that was without Franz Wagner, who's been dealing with an ankle injury. So they obviously need Josh Green to play really well. So he's been fine, but he hasn't maybe been as impactful as was hoped. Also, Joe Ingles, he hasn't shot the three ball well. But, there's always time in these situations. So they have a big game on Friday. I will tell you in a second exactly what time that game is, but you can watch on ESPN.
I can tell you right now. That game is at 7:55 Eastern Time on ESPN Plus.
I will say for folks like me who maybe aren't just like wake up super early type of people, you can watch those games on replay on ESPN Plus as well.
That's right. You can't go back and see the whole game. So yeah. It is available for that. And that game is also huge for Slovenia in particular for Olympic qualification purposes. Mm-hmm. Australia is already qualified because in Oceania, they just qualify almost automatically. They did when New Zealand lost.
New Zealand lost last night. Yeah, they qualified.
But if the Slovenians don't get out of the second round and into the quarters, you have to be one of the top two European finishers. And with Serbia and Germany and Spain all, you know, very likely at this point, the way this is broken out, Serbia and Spain are all but certain, I think, or I shouldn't say certain, but very likely to advance to the quarterfinals. Right. If you don't get into the quarterfinals, you're into one of these qualification tournaments next summer, like the one Luka had to go to Lithuania to win back in 21 to even get into the Olympics. Yeah. So this is big on a variety of levels.
Yeah, which means you got to play four games before you even get to the Olympics. And when you talk about maybe running out of gas towards the end, that's probably part of it.
Yep.
So anyway, so the U.S. will play Montenegro on Friday, Lithuania on Sunday. Lithuania is huge. Jonas Valanciunas is there. They have other terrific big guys. And then they have a really good guard, Rokas Jokubaitis, I think is how you say his name.
He is Jokubaitis, former Knicks draft pick.
Yeah.
Early second round pick a couple years ago.
Yeah, he is, just call him Rokas. That's what, you know. So that'll be one of the things that the U.S., they have just such an advantage at the guard position. You know, there's some big men here that are pretty good. There's some wings that are pretty good. But at the guard position, the U.S. just, and that's why Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Luka are so much of a threat, because they're not going to dominate the guards. Like, you know, the guards for Jordan, I mean, Mikal Bridges was like, he was doing psychological damage to them. Because like the U.S. game plan is to pressure the ball because they don't have big size, and you know, Jaren Jackson's like back there just trying to block shots. He's hard to get around, but they don't have great size, so they pressure the heck out of the ball. And Mikal Bridges is often the guy at the point of attack. And quite frankly, it's difficult at times for people to get the ball across half court on the U.S. And so,
clear, it's difficult for teams like Jordan to get the ball over half court.
Right,
it's not going to be the case when they're playing against teams like Lithuania and Germany.
Well,
and Serbia,
I would say to you that having watched Lithuania for years, that look, Lithuania's guard play has long been their challenge. But Rokas is a big improvement in that regard, and he is averaging 12 points and five assists. And I think Lithuania has like seven guys averaging at least 7 points. They have a very spread out attack, and they're very big. And so Steve Kerr was getting ready for that game by looking at two big lineups, which he doesn't like, I think, typically to play. But U.S. takes care of Montenegro on Friday. It's a big thing, but the U.S. really wants to win these two games. Obviously you want to win every game. If the U.S. wins against Montenegro and Lithuania, they slot themselves into a spot in the quarterfinals where they are on the opposite side of Canada and the team that wins that Germany, Australia, brain fart, Slovenia bracket. So they would avoid those teams in the quarterfinals. They would probably be slotted in to play either Italy or Dominican at this point, Serbia possibly as well. Those are teams that are a little bit lesser in my view. No offense to anybody, a little bit lesser. And then the second part of it is, if the U.S. wins those two games and slots into that spot in the quarterfinals, they get 2 days off in between the quarterfinals and the semifinals. Ooh. That is a big advantage. I would argue that 2 day off situation might have made a huge difference in the last World Cup, because in the last World Cup, Argentina got that spot. And the fact that Luis Scola, who was like one of the best players in the event, got 2 days off between the quarterfinals and semifinals.
At age
made
41.
A huge difference. Yes, he was first team all tournament, and he was brilliant in the semifinals when Argentina upset Australia in double overtime. And then he had nothing left in the final. The Spanish blew out Argentina, but it does make a difference. And that late in the tournament, you know, so having an easier draw and a better schedule there would make a difference. So those two wins would make a difference. The other thing I'm going to say before we move on to Ben Simmons is that if Canada keeps winning and the U.S. keep winning, they're headed for a meeting in the finals. If Canada loses or the U.S. loses between now and the start of the quarterfinals, that bracketing can change. But if you're looking for potential, and I'm not assuming that, just to be clear, because there's a lot of happens, but if you're looking for this potential Canada versus U.S. showdown, which I think a lot of people think could be the case, if they keep winning, it would be in the finals, which is on September 10th, Sunday, September 10th, which is, look, it's in the morning. You can watch that before you watch NFL Sunday.
There you go.
On ESPN.
Watch that as you're picking your fantasy
ESPN
team.
Too, I think, actually.
Getting your starters and who's on the bench. Hey, if there's 2 days off between games, do you think you can get Austin Reaves out there on the golf course?
You know he's going to try.
Brother, there ain't nobody playing golf in Manila right now. It is buckets of rain are falling nonstop. Nobody playing golf right now. So,
more Hoop Collective podcast after this.
If only starting your fitness journey was as easy as starting this podcast. The truth is, all the lift big, get big, and beach body ready in 3 weeks pressure stops most of us from even starting. And starting is what matters most. It's everything. Wherever you're beginning and wherever you want to be, Peloton encourages you to just start. With thousands of classes to get you moving and doing what you can, even if that's just a 10-minute low-impact class, they have those too. And when you're ready, take it up a gear with a 30-minute live DJ ride. Start with Peloton and find instructors that will keep you motivated to stay on your fitness journey. Learn the basics and build from there. Remember, doing something is everything. Get started with a Peloton bike or bike plus rental at onepeloton.com/bike/rentals. Terms apply. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call or click Grainger.com or just stop by. Okay, so Ben Simmons gave an interview to our Mark J. Spears from our partner at Anscape.
Hall of Famer Mark J. Spears, please.
Hall of Famer. Von Temps. The New Yorker among us. Mm. This was a hell of an interview.
Sure was.
And he did the interview in Miami where he's been working out. I mean, we've seen footage of Ben Simmons, obviously.
Every offseason. Come on.
I mean, here's the deal. Ben Simmons said a lot of stuff in this interview. Okay. I think we could set all of it aside because I think there's only two real takeaways here.
We should read what he said.
We can read through what he said. I don't care about what he said because other than one thing, which is what I'm going to say now, which is that he just started playing 2-on-2.
That's right. Thank you. So that's what I took away from that.
The rest of the stuff he said about I'm going to come back and kill and I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. I don't care. When he was playing early in his career in Philly, he's a terrific player. Mm-hmm. I enjoy watching him play. I hope we could get back to watching that version of Ben Simmons play. Until we see that version of Ben Simmons or something close to it again, I'm not holding my breath waiting to see, and I don't care what he says about it. It's the same with the Zion Williamson situation. These guys who just are not playing, they need to just play. He needs to be on the court and play. And when he says, I've just started doing 2-on-2 work at the start of September, that does not give me a lot of confidence that Ben Simmons is going to be out there on the court and ready to go against the Cavs at the end of October when Brooklyn kicks off their season. That, to me, is all that really matters from this.
Well, I don't really care if he plays in October, but I care more about what he looks like when he does play.
Well, I understand that. I'm just saying for all of the talk about, oh, I feel great and things are going great, like if he's just getting on the court.
He announces, I'm at 100%. I feel I'm at 100%.
Well, but I mean, he can say that, but he's not at 100% because he just started playing 2-on-2 and we're at Labor Day weekend.
Yeah, that's problematic. And look, the reason Ben Simmons was so awesome when he was younger, before all this stuff happened, the guy was one of the best athletes in the NBA. No question. He was a 6'10" point guard who was top five athlete in the entire league. Back surgeries sap athleticism. I don't think it's reasonable to think he's ever going to be, forget top five, like a top 50 athlete in the league again. And if he's not a top 50 athlete, then his lack of, you know, that's like, he was such a freak athlete that he could overcome his lack of shooting ability. If he's just a good athlete, then he can't, especially, well, I mean, especially without a roster that's just totally tailored to play with him.
And even over the 5 or 6 years since he started his career, the focus and emphasis on shooting has shifted so much in that direction that it's that much harder to get away with having even one guy on the court who isn't a shooter. And look, when he was playing with Joel was a guy you worried about shooting threes. You are not worried about Nick Claxton shooting threes. No. So if you have him and Ben Simmons out there, even if you've got Cam Johnson and Mikal Bridges and Dorian Finney-Smith playing next to him, with two non-shooters on the court, your life is very difficult as an NBA offense. And that's assuming Ben Simmons is 100% healthy and is playing somewhere near where he was before, which is a massive assumption given we haven't seen that version of Ben Simmons in 3 years now.
Well, and people can say, well, what about Giannis? Giannis isn't a shooter, you know, blah, blah, blah. One thing I would say is that Giannis has a completely different mentality and always has. Ben Simmons does not want to be that aggressive because he doesn't want to get fouled.
Giannis is playing
next to Brooke Lopez also. So he's oftentimes the worst shooter on the court and he still will shoot the ball.
Right.
Well, the thing about Giannis that I love, and I'm not saying that you can't find instances where he was maybe trying to avoid getting fouled a little bit, is that Giannis doesn't mind failing.
Doesn't mind going, hey, if he's 7 of 18 from the line in a game, so be it.
Yeah, he'll keep going for sure.
All right, well, let me read some of these quotes just in case people didn't see it. He said, he was asked about what his goal was for the upcoming season. He said, for me to come back and dominate people will be great. I don't intend to come back the same player I was last season because that's not even close to where I am. I get excited because I'm like, damn, I would bleep on the player I was last year. But I know where I was last year, so it's easy to say that. But it's just fun to go do the thing that you love when you're out there. The version I'm at right now, if I was playing against myself from last season, I would kill him. That's how I feel.
Well, now, he can play one-on-one, so I think that's he can say that.
Okay, so this is just my hypothesis, just to be clear. No one has told me this. Mm-hmm. This is my view of the situation. We got it. I wonder if this attitude and going public with this attitude is part of an effort to build up his confidence.
Yeah.
Because as we know, obviously the back is an issue and it's been an issue since he was in Philly.
Can I make a counterpoint to this before we continue?
Yeah. Yeah.
These are the kinds of things that Ben Simmons has always said. This is always the thing he has presented. He's never once said, I have an issue shooting the ball. He's never once said
he went like 9 months without speaking to the media. This is not a media day. He invited Mark to come talk to him and he made these comments.
Yeah, I understand.
I don't think it's quite the same.
Well, I guess my point is he's had plenty of instances of saying things like this in the past. To me, I don't care about what he said. It just doesn't matter to me. Is he going to actually be on the court? And is he actually going to forget being an all-star? Is he just going to be a productive player and on the court on a regular basis next year? That would be a win from where it's been.
But I agree with where Wendy was going with this. And that's, look, since this guy shriveled in front of the entire world and got scared of 148-pound Trae Young and passed the ball, a critical moment in his final series in Philadelphia, his final game in Philadelphia. Since that moment, he has played 42 games, and as he's basically saying himself, not well. And I think this guy's trying to basically find a pump to pump himself back up.
Well,
perhaps
this was a strategic situation. Now, something else.
I mean, that part said, I agree with for sure.
I'm not saying it's going to work, but I think
this is something else that he said. He talked about his relationship with Jacque Vaughn.
These were very interesting quotes.
Okay. So as you remember, I'm sure you do if you're listening to this pod, Jacque Vaughn took over December. Did Steve make it through November? I can't remember, but early in the season.
He got fired in mid-November.
Jacque Vaughn took over as the interim coach for about 2 days. It looked like Ime Udoka was going to be the Nets head coach. And then that didn't happen. And then Jacque Vaughn.
Right in the middle of the whole Kyrie controversy, by the way. This all happened in the middle of that nexus, which is, I think we could say, at least a factor in why Ime was not the coach of the team.
Okay. So I just think it's important to realize that Jacque Vaughn was like the interim coach, and then the interim coach, and then the head coach. Okay. So this is what he was saying. I feel like our relationship to start was terrible. There was just so many different factors going into the team. We had Steve, and then Jacque became the head coach. Kev, Kai were left. I'm not playing. I don't really have a relationship with him like that because he wasn't the head coach. There was a little distance or gap between the assistants and the injured players sometimes. And I got mad at him because there was no communication. There's none of that. So I'm kind of a little frustrated with Coach. I know Coach is frustrated with me. He was describing about how things were last season. One day people are telling him I'm good. The next it's not. From the start, it wasn't good. So it's a tough situation for him and myself. But now having the right plan and team around me, he has seen from Simmons, okay, he's dedicated. He wants to work. He wants to win. And he's doing what he's willing to do to be on the court. So now we're in a great place. I speak to him every other day. I'm excited because I think Coach is great, great as a person, great coach. That's the main thing, just being a good human. He said that Jacque has been down to see him in Miami 3 times this summer and that he has told him, quote, point guard. He will play point guard. That's who I am. As much as people say, fix this, fix that. No, I'm a point guard. When I was playing at a high level, nobody was really saying anything to me. So
I mean,
Hold on, one more thing. Spears followed up saying, so Coach Vaughn has said you're going to be the point guard. Yes, we've spoken about that. I think he's come down enough to where he knows, okay, he's going to be ready.
This is the fundamental problem with the whole Ben Simmons persona, okay? And this is coming from someone who has always liked dealing with Ben, really enjoys watching Ben as a player, wants to see Ben Simmons healthy on the court playing well again. The idea that, quote, people were not really telling me things when I was playing at a high level is just flatly insane. That's a completely ridiculous thing to say. The shot has always been a huge problem. He was
Brett Brown was begging him. Remember, he was saying, just take one a game.
I was there when that happened. Let's just have him take one. Let's start there. Right. This has been an ongoing thing. And Ben Simmons has always refused to admit it. He's always never been willing to say, yeah, I'm not a good shooter. It's something I need to work on. It's something I can get better at. He's never been willing to do that ever. And this whole interview was all sort of the same stuff over again. Oh, yeah, I'm a point guard. People didn't say this stuff to me when I was playing well. No, they did say that stuff to you. It was a problem then. You were playing in the Toronto series basically in the short corner at center because you couldn't have the ball in the fourth quarter of games because you were a liability at the foul line and you were not a three-point shooter. This has been an ongoing problem for a long time. So, again, I hope he is back on the court healthy. I hope he plays really well. I just don't really care about these comments and what he's saying. This is a put up or shut up, the definition of a put up or shut up situation with him getting back on the court and playing again. This is all the same stuff, just in a different packaging that he's been saying for years.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. And, you know, there was a question in there where, Spears asked him, you know, basically, why didn't you ask out when KD did, when Kyrie did? And the honest answer would have been like, do you think anybody's traded for that contract? Like, dude, right now, Ben Simmons, is there a worse contract in the NBA? Is there a bigger albatross of a contract?
Given we don't know if he's going to be able to get on the court, I think the answer is no. You could maybe argue because it's only 2 years, but yeah, I mean, it's one of the worst easily.
Yeah, and
until further notice,
you know, right?
That's right. No, thank you.
Yeah, for sure. Right now, though, he is. It's interesting. I can't say I thought about Ben Simmons in a while before Spears had this story. Like, he's kind of just been forgotten about.
Like you said, he's played 42 games in two seasons.
42 games. Well, yeah, but the first year that he wasn't playing games, he was definitely in the public consciousness. From the holdout to, like, let's be honest, when the back stuff first came up, everybody thought it was just a ploy to not have to go out on the floor for the 76ers anymore. Obviously, it was much, much, much more serious than that, and it wasn't any kind of make-believe stuff.
Well, the back thing actually came up during the Nets-Celtics series, because he was going to play. He was gonna, all the talk was he was going to play in that game four, and then all of a sudden it was, well, Ben can't go today, when he was like on the verge of coming back. And it was like, oh, well, all right.
I do wonder what the people with the Australian national team, who obviously they're busy playing in the World Cup, because he does have something in here talking about he definitely wants to play in the Olympics. My assumption is the reaction is basically kind of rolling their eyes, like, okay, dude, we'll believe it when we see you in a uniform.
I would say that's definitely, I mean, I haven't asked the Australians, but based off of the history between Ben Simmons and Australia with that, I would say that's 1,000% the reaction to
right.
that.
Are you thinking 2024 Olympics in Paris? Yeah, for sure. Olympics, yeah, 100%. And that's what I want to do next year. He says, Spears says, have you told Australian basketball officials of these hopes? He says, I'll let you break the news.
Yeah.
Like,
and to be clear, Spears, the interview with Spears is great. Me saying I don't care about what Ben said, the interview is a really interesting read. I read the whole thing the day it came out, but let's just see Ben Simmons on the court.
It can
just
be
like, let's see Zion Williamson on the court.
It can be interesting, and you cannot put a lot of stock into it.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. So to be continued there. Before we go, the NBA announced Wednesday evening. I think I saw it when I got up here Thursday morning.
Thursday afternoon
that,
back here in America.
That Eric Lewis, longtime NBA referee who had been, I guess, suspended, or I don't know what the word is.
They had launched an investigation back in the spring. And this was the result.
Right. And so he announced he's retiring after 19 seasons because I don't remember who revealed that some people on Twitter felt that they had found his burner accounts. I think
People on Twitter very clearly found his burner account. And then on top of that, people started harassing, I would say, I don't know if harassing is the right word, but people then found that his family had Celtics fans in it. And so that became a thing.
Well, right. Well, he had officiated that Lakers Celtics game where there was
the missed call at the end of the game. Yes.
This is a great Pat Bev camera moment.
Yes. With Eric Lewis.
Which was funny.
It was funny.
Okay, here's what I'm going to say about this. So I'm going to read the NBA statement in its entirety. NBA referee Eric Lewis has informed the league office that he is retiring effective immediately. In light of his decision, the NBA's investigation into social media activity has been closed. I'm a little suspicious of the Lewis doing the informing. It being his decision. And then, so the investigation has been closed. Okay. First of all, like, how long was this investigation going to take? So basically what I'm calling is BS on this. And like, dude, you're the NBA where there's been a ton of questions about, frankly, the integrity of officiating. I mean, damn, there's an entire Netflix documentary about the Tim Donaghy scandal that's still in the back. I'm just saying, I would think some transparency is in order here instead of just, well, gee whiz, he decided to retire. I guess that closes the investigation. Why? Who knows what we would have found if we'd actually gotten to the end of this investigation.
That's the thing. It seems like there might be more to it, but I don't know. You know, it just happened.
Look, I would say this read as Eric. From everything I saw with these burner account tweets, it did not seem really to be that bad in the aggregate. It was like basically defending referees. The issue is, and the issue is referees are not supposed to. That's right. And the issue like that in itself is not a huge deal. These referees are not supposed to be on social media. They're not supposed to be commenting publicly about things. That is inherently what the issue is with this situation. I don't know if he needed to be driven out of his job. I think it's very safe to say, as you said, McMahon, if you read this, this felt very much like a you can resign or you can be fired situation, and you choose to resign. I think the bigger, longer term thing with this is the NBA has now lost another pretty good veteran ref. There have been a bunch of pretty good veteran refs to very good veteran refs the past several years that have graduated out, and it's sort of TBD on how the replacements are going. And I think that's an interesting story to watch.
There needs to be transparency from the NBA. The investigation, don't say you closed the investigation. What'd you find? You had plenty of
time. I don't think that's happening.
What'd you find?
I mean, yeah, there's a 0% chance.
Okay, then don't cry when people don't believe that the officiating in the NBA has integrity. You can't have it both ways.
Well, I mean, look, the NBA loves to try to have it both ways. It never does. I also think that a lot of the initiatives they have tried to put in with this stuff, like the last 2 minute reports and some of this other stuff, has all pretty much backfired anyway. I don't think any of it's really changed the way people look at this stuff. I just think it's given more ammunition for people to take shots at the refs. So
Here's the thing. You can't listen to players and coaches about officiating. It doesn't mean that they're wrong when they say that a referee might have a certain bias. It doesn't mean that they're wrong when they say that this call was incorrect or whatever. It's them who are feeling it on their bodies or whatever. It is impossible for them to be objective. It is not also in their human nature, which is why that Luka can get to the foul line 15 times and be furious that he's getting the wrong whistle. He's genuinely furious. He might even be in some cases correct, but he cannot be the arbiter. Okay. And so like in that documentary that you were talking about, McMahon, Andre Iguodala was on a podcast, I believe Gilbert Arenas' podcast a couple of weeks ago. And he was talking about, he only played like a dozen or so games last year with the Warriors, and he got ejected from one of them. And he said that the reason he got ejected, this was his explanation for why he got ejected, not necessarily the referees. This is his explanation for why he got ejected, was because he came to the official and said, "I saw the Netflix doc." And the referee supposedly kicked him out based on that. Now, that was an awesome thing to say on a podcast.
I'm sure he said it, though. That's exactly the kind of guy he is.
I'm sure he did say it. I don't know if that's maybe he said 36 things and that was the 36.
Well, but again, if you're Andre Iguodala and you walk up to the ref and you say that, you're implying that he's fixing the game, which is why he got ejected, of course.
That's right. But that is the issue that the league has, is the appearance of the integrity, not even whether it's true. It's just the appearance of it. And frankly,
that's right.
While I absolutely believe we didn't get the full Tim Donaghy story, I also think that Tim Donaghy has less than zero credibility. So, I can't trust anybody in that situation. So all I'm just saying is this: I can't take what a player or a coach or a general manager says about refereeing it doesn't have lack of bias. I don't have access to all the referee stats, but here's what I can tell you. Eric Lewis was an all-star official. He refereed a bunch of finals games, and I felt on games that I watched, he did a very good job of
he's a good ref
handling the game while maintaining control, maintaining his composure. I thought he was one of the best officials that we would see in the league. And this is definitely a loss for the NBA. It doesn't mean that he didn't deserve to be going. But when it comes to the concept of integrity with officials, I can't listen to what players say about it.
Okay. And that's fine.
It's okay. It's not to be offensive, but they're in the game. I don't think the story here
is about what the players say.
The thing about it here is like NBA is choosing to be as vague as possible here. They are like, let's listen to what the league office has to say. Oh, two sentences of complete bullcrap. Okay, great.
Why they're being vague? Because if they say any more, it only opens up more things for people to point at, which further undermines the integrity.
And people also were already going after the guy's family and stuff as it is. I think at the end of the day, to me, the biggest long-term ramification of this is what you just said, Brian. The league has lost another good ref. And over the past several years, it's lost a ton of good, experienced refs. And I think that is going to be a long-term problem if it isn't already one now. That, I think, is the biggest issue with this.
Well, Chris Paul's not got too much left to playing career. And
you mean like Leon Wooding, go into that side of things.
The man knows the rule book. I can tell you that right now.
He'd be teeing up people faster than his old buddy Scott Foster. He became a ref. Tee here, be doing little tees all around.
Paul do the little tees.
I'm telling you, one of the best things that a ref can be is have control of the game without having emotion. This is obviously not breaking news. Eric Lewis was one of those types of guys.
He's a good ref for sure.
Now, he apparently had emotion on social media, but not outward in the game. And so,
hey, this is
it's unfortunate.
Same advice I give to a lot of young reporters. When in doubt, don't tweet.
It's a good way to end.
I agree. Right, it's the 99% rule that I've used for years. Actually, my rule is 99.99. If you have 1%, should I? Like even don't one just little teeny doubt. No.
Just don't.
No.
Don't. I've had to learn that one. Now that I'm old and wise, I've got it.
X, not Twitter. X. Okay. Thank you for listening to the Hoop Collective podcast. Thank you and happy birthday. We're running out of time here, McMahon, to you to celebrate your birthday. Get some icy hot on that back. Thank you to Bontemps. I guess, I don't know. Next time we talk to you, will you be overseas? I don't know.
Nope. I'll still be here.
Thank you to Jackson, our producer, who came in off the basketball court to record this pod. Thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you soon.
Adios, amigos. And feliz cumpleaños.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.